I'm with Amanda Brown in London, and I'm going to let her introduce herself.
Okay, hi, I'm Amanda Brown. My role at the moment is CEO of Sonar News, which is an artificial intelligence gathering platform. It's high technology using natural language processing to surface relevant content from social media platforms. My background is journalism. I worked a lot in radio. I've also done television and print. So I moved from that into digital media, and I worked for a long time for Audio Boom, the podcasting company. So in a nutshell, that's my bio.
When and where did we first meet?
Right, I was giving a seminar or a workshop on how to make a podcast to Media Trust people, and you were one of the people in the room. It was a really interesting mix. There were some Christians, there were some people from, I think, the Quakers organization. Mm-hmm. There was someone from the BBC, which really shocked me, but she was working for Comic Relief, so she was from that part of the BBC, and a couple of other, there was a really interesting one as well, who a charity who helped prisoners learn to read.
So the Shannon Trust.
That's right.
Yeah.
So I kind of did a presentation on how you make a podcast, and I managed to put in all my personal pet peeves as well. And you were just telling me about the project that you were just starting up, which was this project, in fact, the Tea with Vicar project, which sounded really appealing to me. And I think it's a great basis for a podcast because it's a good structure to have a conversation. And particularly for what you're interested in, which is how other people and how people in society view Christianity today. So I'm really curious about that.
Mm. It was also a really, really hot day, and I had to come on the tube past the Grenfell Tower, and it's the first time I'd actually seen it. It was quite a kind of moving sort of day, really. It was really, really good course. If anyone's listening to this and wants to learn how to do that, they should go on a Media Trust podcasting course. So do you drink tea?
Well, it's a great question. My parents are powered by tea. I grew up around tea. I've never been able to stand tea.
Now you're drinking something else. Is it jasmine tea?
Yes. Actually, I think it's apple tea. So I do drink herbal teas. Caffeine and other substances have a massive effect on me, so chamomile tea puts me to sleep in about 20 minutes flat, which is useful at times, but not great in your middle of your working day. So I'm actually, oddly, I'm not a huge hot drinker. I don't know whether I'm stuck in my childhood or what, but yeah, I'm not a classic tea drinker. I went to Italy when I was 17, and I was au pairing, and the couple who I was au pairing for, he was the mayor of the town. And on my second day there, they said, have a cup of tea. And I said, oh, no, thank you, I don't drink tea. And they looked at me confused, and then they said, no, a cup of tea. And I said, yes, no, I understood, but no, thank you, I don't drink tea. And then they went upstairs and came back down and came down with a book, which they opened up, and it said, English people drink tea. And they pointed and said, English people drink tea. And they were really disappointed that their English au pair would not drink tea. But yeah, just not my cup of tea.
So do you have a favourite of your herb teas then?
Ooh, no, it changes all the time. Truth be told, I don't really like any of them, but it's really unsociable not to drink hot drink, so I just put up with them.
Quite a few of my interviewees who don't like tea can give me a tale of the time they had to drink tea and it was awful, or drinking a little bit and leaving the rest.
Yeah.
So, yes. So, the question which we're asking everybody is, how do you respond to the statement, Christianity in the UK is not dying but sleeping?
I think it's a good statement to start with because it frames the fact that there is an issue with Christianity in the UK, and I don't think we can skirt around that. For me, I went to a C of E primary school, but my parents weren't religious. I don't class myself as a Christian or of any other religion. So I'm not very well qualified to talk about Christianity in the UK other than my experience as a child, and also now my oldest child is at a nominally Christian school. So what I would say is, from my perspective, Christianity needs rebranding, essentially. I think that there's a generational problem for Christianity. I think also there's an issue with the structure of the church. I think that churches, rather like their beautiful old buildings, are part of a bygone era. And it's worked very, very well for a very, very long time for lots of people. But for the last 6 decades, things have changed so rapidly, and people have changed, and our society has changed to the point where Christianity, in my view, hasn't kept up. And as a result, I think that there's a lot of people who just don't see it as relevant in their lives. That said, a lot of the tenets of Christianity and a lot of the things about Christianity that were put forward to me as a child and as an adult are the things that people are actually desperately in need of. People more than ever in our country need community, need care, need mental health support, which people don't necessarily put those two things together, but actually that's exactly, if you read the Bible or you listen to a vicar or a reverend such as yourself, that's a lot of what it's all based in. So I think the message has got diluted, and I do, again, personally come from a perspective that Christianity is very tied in with the patriarchy, and for me, I'm a feminist, and I've had to fight very hard for where I've got to in life, and I've seen a lot of inequity, and I haven't seen the church helping with that very much. I think the Protestant church has probably helped more than some other sections of Christianity, but I think that's another whole issue.
Yeah. I've got some specialist questions for you. Your three specialist questions. The first one is, how do you think Christians in the UK could better use podcasting to further their mission?
I think that podcasting is a great opportunity to have a conversation, just like we're having now. And I think that it's a good way of particularly engaging directly and finding out more what other people think rather than talking down from a lectern to a group of people. So in that way, I think that podcasting is a great way to reach young people. I think that young people listen to young people these days, which is a big difference, part of social media and part of the way that our media has evolved. Podcasting allows that conduit. Really importantly, it allows you to set up a channel of your own as an institution. Whereas before, especially in the UK, everything went through the BBC, which was positive and it was negative. It was positive in that the BBC was a very well-structured organisation that had to give certain time to every element. But in a negative way, if you were a person who was particularly interested in something, you couldn't necessarily access it always or easily via this one institution. Now that things have become more open in terms of producing media, podcasting gives Christians and Christianity the opportunity to speak more and more widely to an audience and find their own audience, and for their audience to find them much more easily. So I think young people, young Christians, could do a lot with podcasting. I think in terms of charity, charity organisations, Christian charity organisations, could inform other people and the community about the things that they're doing more easily. So I think there's several options there. And back to what I was talking about earlier, rebranding, it's a really good chance to get... to build your own stars, really, to build certain people like yourself who are going out there talking to other people and giving a basis and a structure for a media outlet for the institution.
The next question is about social media. So how, as a UK society, can we be united when we seem to be neatly split into social media users and people who don't use social media?
We're in a generational gap more than I think any other generation has encountered since probably before the Industrial Revolution. We're going through a technological revolution that is faster and more intense and a bigger change for our society than the Industrial Revolution, or probably since we designed flint stone tools and started being able to dig holes. What's happened in the last 5-10 years? YouTube's only been around for less than 10 years. When you actually consider that, it's extraordinary how it's changed the entire face of society. But deeper than that, artificial intelligence, natural language processing, the forms of technology software that are coming very quickly into everyday life are changing things so dramatically. And if you've grown up with computers, then you're grasping it. It makes perfect sense. It's the next evolution. If you haven't grown up with computers, which is anybody probably 48 plus, then you are at a massive disadvantage, because it is much more alien concept to you. And I think that you see it in media, you see it in mainstream media, particularly from broadsheet newspapers and others. You see this branding of millennials. You know, there's always been the youth of today approach. But I mean, there was one headline I read not that long ago from the Daily Telegraph, and it said that 9 out of 10 or 8 out of 10 millennials can't recognise a cow. And it was a classic sort of Daily Telegraph headline, but it really illuminates the vilification of the younger generation and the fear of the technological change and understanding of that generation, because it is the future. It's actually the present.
I'm really interested by your cutoff, because I'm 47 and a half.
So,
but I wonder if for me there is something about the fact that I walk in between, because I have never taken money out by writing a check, made it payable to self. But when I was a child, that's all my mum did. I've only ever used the cash machine, and I just wonder whether there's something for us in that little bit in between that could be useful to bridge for people.
I couldn't agree more. I think you're entirely right. I would put myself in that zone as well.
And for me, I think it's been quite interesting. So I have two Facebook accounts. I have a private one and a public one, and the public one mainly says, come to church. In however many guises we're doing this, come to church. But the private one has now got 50 people, two of whom are dead, but I haven't taken them off. And they are people who most of them I've known for between 20 and 30 years.
Yes.
And that's a very different way. And they're people that I don't see very often, but I am able to keep our relationship going because I see it on Facebook. And yes, that's been really important.
I think it's important for a lot of people. And I think especially as you age, the ability to bank online, the ability to shop online, the ability to connect with other people that you know or have known, and particularly family and family that's abroad. I mean, I lived in Ireland for 12 years. I had my children there. And I just used to, my mother and I just used to open up Skype on the kitchen tables and have it on through the day while we were wandering around doing our stuff, so that she could see the grandchildren, we could chat and catch up. And it was kind of like being in each other's kitchens. You know, and that's, I don't think we should underestimate the power and the positive effects of that. I think where social media sends us down the wrong place is the addictive nature of the screen and being stuck to a screen, and also the very edited surreality of looking at other people's lives through their own selective lens that they've put, and then comparing yourself to that. And I think that happens a lot. People look at other people's lives where they've put up their holiday pictures and their children are behaving beautifully, and you know, their husbands are handsome, and you know, they've gone somewhere very expensive, and you immediately get a response of, wow, their life is so much better than mine. How has my life worked out like this? I'm covered in baby sick and not gone anywhere for 12
years.
Months. And yeah, why? What you don't know is the fact that 2 minutes after that photo was taken, two of their children started knocking each other over the heads with this bucket and spade. Husband went, I can't deal with this, I'm going down pub for, you know, 2 days. you don't see any of that, but nobody has it perfect. So I think there's pros and cons.
So the last of your specialist questions, what do you think are the most important and challenging issues facing girls as they grow up in the UK today?
This is quite an easy one. Lack of equality is what's most challenging. I think glaring lack of equality. Obviously, there are movements now for change, the Me Too movement, the Women's Equality Party in the UK. Ireland have just voted to finally abandon the most draconian, frightening Eighth Amendment to their constitution, which left pregnant women in the most appallingly uncared for conditions. But I think young women right now in the UK are facing into that battle, and everything has been more delineated, more protracted into two sides, more polarised than I think it was when I was younger. So although there's lots of movements for change to make things better, there's obviously a pushback against that that's much more visible and much more seeable. Right now, as girls graduate into the workforce, they're still going to be paid considerably less than boys, even girls with the same qualifications or better. Initially in their first year, still get paid on average less than boys and men. It's 77 pence to the male pound on average still. We have a gender pay gap, which also involves women not being promoted and being paid more in higher positions. So fundamentally, women and young girls are seeing this very starkly now, I think. And it's quite a difficult thing to graduate into and decide, well, I'm going to take up the mantle for this and fight. You know, a lot of young girls might not want to take up a mantle and fight. You know, they might not want to be an issue or part of an issue. They just want to get on with their lives. They want to, you know, find a good job, settle down, you know, have a family, not settle down, travel, do whatever it is they want to do. And there's this big looming political issue that's very difficult for them to ignore now. So I think that it's really, really tough to be a young woman in this UK society at the moment. I think that there's a lot of demands on them. There's still the issues of body image. You know, that it's probably worse than ever. The other evening we had Love Island on the TV. We actually had the wonderful Lucy Worsley on BBC One, the most fantastic programme about suffragettes. And halfway through it, on ITV, Love Island started up. And we have a 14-year-old girl in our house. And, you know, I was saying, let's watch the suffragettes, amazing beginning of the women's political movement and making change and all the interesting things about that. And she said, no, I can't miss Love Island. All my friends are talking about it. You know, I have to know what's going on. And you switch it on and it's, you know, young women who've starved themselves for a year in order to be thin enough to go on the programme. And you know, and also young men who it's still all about looks for them as well, and more so for young men now than it used to be. But it's just a general levelling of shallowness that's a bit depressing, really, I think. You know, it's all outwards, there's no inwards. And there's so many pressures. There's just so many pressures. So I think society is changing for the positive and evolving. I think, you know, equal rights have become more of an issue in the UK. There was always a conversation in the US about civil liberties, which we actually didn't have in the UK. You know, we sort of swept that idea under the carpet and kind of put off this veneer that, oh yes, we have equality, everything's equal. You know, when I left school thinking everything was equal, because everything was equal for me at school. Everything was very fair and equal. And you know, and then I went through university and I get quite a few hints. You know, I remember being in competition with one group of boys and, you know, and pitching an idea. And then say one of them turning to me and saying, may the best man win. And I remember thinking, that's a bit ridiculous and outdated, but okay. And then when I went into the workplace, it hit me like a big, large, wet uncomfortable trout in the face that, oh, I'm being paid less, I'm having less opportunity for promotion, I'm being talked down to, and, you know, being shouted at from vans in the street as to how I look, and my male counterparts aren't going through any of that. And that lack of equality sinks in on a level where, even if you're not fighting a fight and you don't have a particular cause, it sinks into your psyche. And young women in this country are surrounded by all of that at the moment. So there's hope. There's hope that it's changing and it's improving. But I don't think it's changed or improved fast enough. I would have hoped that by this point in my life I would have seen significant improvement. And it's not happening quickly enough. So they've got this huge challenge ahead of them. And whether they choose to view it that way or not is a different thing. You know, it depends on your mentality. But it's tough. It's tough.
So the last question, which is often the one that people struggle with, is what is your favourite thing beginning with T?
It's very easy for me, it's tennis. So I played tennis from the age of 7 or 8. And I played national tennis until I was about 14. And then I've coached tennis throughout large chunks of my life. And I've always played, it's always been there for me. And I absolutely love tennis. So it's a very easy T word for me. It's a big part of my life and it's taught me a lot.
So thank you ever so much, Amanda.
You're welcome.